Doug and Roxanne are moving to Springwood.
I feel so much better moving to a small town.
But the neighbors may take some getting used to.
I've been through your things.
Will Roxanne fit in with the locals?
This is a dream.
But if you're wrong.
Find out.
I just love having new neighbors.
On the next Freddy's Nightmares.
Well, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to, welcome, I did it to myself again, to welcome to Prime Time, a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Enrique Couto, here with my good buddy and co-host, David Denoyer, a.k.a. Louis Denoyer. I'm just kidding. David is a.k.a. to Louis.
I mean, we got that.
And we're back here. We're bringing you guys not only back to Springwood, but we're welcoming you to Springwood, which honestly, it feels like it's about time we get a proper welcome to Springwood after we've basically rented a place there for almost a half a year.
That is very true. So. And, you know, like I said to you on the text over here, we've got some Springwood gospel to share with the people today.
Hallelujah!
Because, oh boy, this episode was fun. This was a very fun
was
one.
Was it?
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay, okay. I thought that it was challenging.
Challenging.
I don't know. I just chose a word that I wouldn't have said.
That's fair.
So, but before we get into that, how's your week been, Dave? Anybody die?
Nobody died. And to give an update for last week,
well, for Birdman,
yes,
because he paid you.
He paid me. Yes,
our buddy Mike the Birdman paid you. That is the interactivity of the program. Mike the Birdman, one of our good buddies at This Week in Geek and a fan of the program, he actually texted me to go, hey, give me Louis's PayPal so I can make him.
And I would just like to read his message.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So
please.
He said, here is $13. Please, for the love of Christ, give that poor person some closure. We need a name. Don't spend this on Taco Bell. Go to Waffle House and go start some shit. Love Birdman. Well, thank you, Birdman. I will do just that. But to give an update, literally when I left Henrik's house last week and I got back home, the car was already gone. It had been towed, from what my neighbor said, around 9:15 that night. So the car is off the street, out of my life. And,
but you can still hear the crying
the
screams
of
a man and his
person.
Family who were lost. But luckily, all you cared about was, but can we find them? Are there no prisons? That's
I am not dude. Ebenezer Scrooge.
No, you're not rich. So.
We know that. At least I know that.
But no. So the car is gone.
The car is
and,
gone,
and
yes.
By the way, if you're listening to this and you would like to watch us talk about Freddy's Nightmares, you can go to freddysnightmares.com and click on Patreon and click the $3 and up tier, and you get video podcasts every single week.
Yes.
Which, and now I've decided to start publishing them a day early too.
I noticed that.
Yeah. So not only do you get the show on video, I was nervous about doing early publishing at first until I was really confident that we were completely in a groove of having them recorded well enough in advance.
Yeah.
If you go there, not only do you get the show in video, but you get the show a day earlier than you would on podcast, because otherwise we release these on Tuesday.
And who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the best part is you can cover your eyes when Dave comes on screen.
So fucking rude.
Well, I mean, don't talk that way about our audience. You're harsh, man.
You.
So, yeah, and, in my life, I don't need any more major appliances.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you will get no crabby homeowner talk this week. You're lucky. We all lucked out.
We got serenaded by the sound of Henrik's new washer on Friday during Joe Bob. And I got to say, that's a nice machine you got there.
What was it? I remember the sound. It's very odd.
It was loud and quiet.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like it's noticeable, but quiet.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thanks, Dave. I mean, I'm proud of my washing machine purchase.
As you should be.
And now I'm a part of the LG family.
Oh, my.
The LG family.
Is forever.
Life's good. LG family.
I got nothing.
We know, Dave.
Oh, God. You're giving me a body snatchers vibe right now. I don't like it.
What do you mean, Dave? Don't you want good appliances? Then where are you going to run? Where are you going to hide? Nowhere. Because there's no one like you left.
I would hope so. I mean, could you imagine more of me?
You deserve a Maytag. So anyway,
a Maytag.
That's what my old washer was. Yeah. What a piece of crap. Only lasted 19 years. Anyway. But this week, we've got a brand new episode of Freddy's Nightmares to talk about. We do want to mention again, in case you were not aware, Tubi unfortunately took down Freddy's Nightmares.
It did indeed.
And we don't know if or when it will end up somewhere else where we can stream it conveniently. Yeah. So we do apologize. If you want to find the show in a less than legitimate form, you'll have to just do that yourself. All I'll tell you is if you use a search, you'll find it immediately.
Yeah, easily.
But otherwise, we're not going to
condone. You know,
we're not going to condone. We don't condemn.
Yes.
We don't condemn bootlegging stuff that you literally can't get even if you would pay for it.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we're mad that it's not on Tubi where it's free. It's you can't get them for 99 cents an episode on iTunes or even $1.99 an episode on iTunes. They're just not on Amazon. They're not on Apple. They're not anywhere that you could pay good money.
I would totally buy a digital copy of Freddy's Nightmares.
I would buy the whole series on like Amazon or VOD or something.
I was actually bummed recently because I remember about a couple years ago, I think it might have been pre-COVID, Vudu had the entire run of Tales from the Crypt, all seven seasons, available in standard definition, of course, but you could buy them. Not anymore. Can't even rent them, can't even buy them.
Huh.
So the rights issue,
but you're still able to look at yourself on the computer when you're talking?
Hey!
Ha ha! Busted! You son of a bitch, you're busted! Anyway. So we have some rules ever since we switched to video for mostly for Dave.
Mostly for me.
And,
yes.
And one of the rules is please don't admire yourself on the screen.
I can't.
When you're, I know you're just like, ooh.
It's not even admired.
I saw you like licking your lips and stuff. You're like, oh man, look at the knee. Yeah. Fuck him. I'll fuck him later tonight. That's what you were saying. I remember.
Jesus
it. What? Okay. So anyway,
yes.
We're heading into season 2, episode 3, which is called Welcome to Springwood. And like I said, it's about time they made this this, you know, official that we get to go to Springwood and be a part of the welcoming committee, which of course would involve Freddy.
That would indeed, so. Yes. So we're talking original air date, either October 16th or the 22nd.
Depending on if you're a Protestant or a Catholic.
1989. This episode is directed by Ken Wiederhorn. We've talked about him at length
before. Oh yeah, Shockwaves, Return of the Living Dead 2.
Yep. All that good stuff. And then our good friends, Al Katz and Gilbert Adler, are the writers on this episode. So we are talking about Welcome to Springwood, which opens with a shot.
You didn't even mention.
What?
We've had Al Katz on the show.
We have had Al Katz
on
the show.
So if you're new to the program, you can go back and listen Al Katz talk about the first episode he wrote, which was Freddy's Tricks or Treats.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Our Tricks and Treats. Tricks and I did what you do.
You did to me. Yeah. All right.
Al's a great guy. And Gil Adler, of course, the producer on every episode of Freddy's Nightmares, as well as this is the team that went on to save Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
And they have a podcast called How Not to Make a Movie, which you could check out. I just wanted to get all those plugs out of the way. And soon enough, Gil and Al will come on. Gil has not been on before, so we're really excited to chat with him.
He's going
to
be an awesome guest.
But now, so Ken Wiederhorn directing, Al Katz and Gil Adler writing.
And this is Welcome to Springwood. We open with a shot on a highway as we see a car driving down the road. Inside the car, we meet husband and wife, Doug and Roxanne Wodehouse.
Roxanne!
Who is played by Leah Aries. She was in All That Jazz in 1979, The Burning in 81.
Wait, the movie about your sex life in college?
Hey, now.
What?
Rude.
Oh, no, that's The Burning while peeing.
The Burning is getting a 4K release soon, too, by the way.
Oh.
I love that movie. It's a great slasher film.
I know you've often said that Harvey Weinstein's finest is exactly the words
and
I heard
young
from
Jason
you.
Alexander and Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter. I always forget she's in that.
She's
too.
In that too, yeah.
Okay, well, so anyway, Dave approves of everything that Harvey Weinstein has done.
That's so not what I said, but okay.
No, it sounds right. Sounds
Doug
accurate.
Doug is played by Michael Horton. He was in Remington Steele, Like Father, Like Son in 87, Dances with Wolves in 90, and he also appeared in Star Trek First Contact in 96 and Star Trek. Insurrection in 90s.
Who did he play in Star Trek? First Contact and Insurrection.
He was a colonel in First Contact, and in Insurrection, he was a guard, is what it said.
Huh. Okay. Okay.
So they are moving into their new house in Springwood. Roxanne is asking Doug about what color he wants to paint the house, but Doug reminds her whatever she wants, she's the designer.
Which is what you say to any woman, really. True. That's like, what color do you want the living room to be? You're like, I have a house.
Roxanne also states it'll all matter on what color furniture they get as well, and asks Doug what color furniture does he want. Doug jokingly responds with green, with orange walls and purple carpeting, which I gotta say, I would live in that.
That is literally my house's color scheme.
Yes, it is. So Roxanne laughs, and Doug states that she's very jovial for someone who's been driving all night. Roxanne expresses that she's happy to move into a small town, stating no more stress. She even stopped taking her medication, which causes Doug to ask her if Dr. Manson knows this, which I'm guessing Dr. Manson is probably Dr. Charles Manson.
Listen, kids. Well, first of all, he earned that PhD in prison. And second of all, remember, this is medical advice, and you should follow it.
God.
This is not medical advice. Do not follow it.
Good.
If you feel like you don't need your very important medication anymore, then stop taking it.
Because
you're the freaking boss. Like, and you know what? If you're out having a good time with your friends and you have a few cold ones and you want to drive, I mean, go for it. You're a goddamn adult. And you should be allowed to do what you want.
Jesus.
And I'm just reading from Dave's personal diary.
Now, that's not true at all, and I cannot deny and or confirm that right now.
Oh, gosh.
She says she's happy to move into a small town, stating no more stress. She stopped taking her pills. Her husband asked her if Dr. Manson knows this, and she tells Doug that she has pills packed with the movers and emergency pills on her if she needs them. But happy right now, she doesn't feel that she needs them.
Which is always a good sign, by the way.
If you're
like, I feel great now. I cleaned the whole house all night. I don't need my bipolar medication. That is not a problem at all.
I feel attacked in some way.
You do. I'm way more medicated than you.
I mean, that's fair. We're both medicated.
Give me a break. This guy over here.
Doug reminds her the pills have made her happy, but eventually agrees with her and states that he's happy too. Roxanne states that this is going to be their new beginning, and Doug's going to be the best criminal lawyer that Springwood's ever seen.
Now, a criminal lawyer, that's a tough gig in Springwood.
I would say so.
No, like, I mean, why would you want that level of market competition? Why not go for crime scene cleaner?
There you go.
That's what we call premium, high-quality job security.
Yeah.
I mean, for real, like, how many jobs did that one waterbed full of blood in part four create?
That's true.
It's not like one guy could clean that up, right? Let alone the bed that spews Johnny Depp's gore all over the place in part one, that created an immense amount of Springwood jobs.
So speaking of part one and that scene, have you ever seen the deleted scene when Johnny Depp comes back?
Where his body pops up and then flops down?
Yes.
Yeah, I have. And it's, the weird thing is, it looks really cheesy, but I think that in part that's because it has no music or sound effects or anything. I bet if he rose up and it was going, Then a little 8-year-old David would have peed his pants and screamed for mom.
I love that score in the original.
No, me too. So but I'm just saying, incredible boon to the economy in Springwood.
criminal
attorney doesn't cause anything. The crime scene cleaners.
Now there you go.
I mean, come on, they could literally franchise a unit just next to Weston Hills and be able to keep every, I mean, these kids, you know what? It would eventually hurt itself because these kids would go away to college because their parents have so much money and Freddie would be like, drats.
All right. That was good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. So Roxanne adds that she wants this to be their new home. No more moving. The car passes a Welcome to Springwood sign with a population listed as 107,462, but the 2 is crossed out and turned into a 1, but then the 1 is crossed out and turned into a 0. And then we cut to Freddie, who is in his domain now with the sign, and states, I'm so excited. I just love having new neighbors, and I'm sure they're just as thrilled to find out that I'm the welcoming committee. I guess you could say they're about to discover that marriage can be a moving experience.
Which, I mean, talk about solid Freddy Krueger style pun. That one's not even a disturbed pun.
No.
He made a joke about moving.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. And he is so happy. Like, he's jumping around the sign and touching on the sign.
Oh, yeah. No, and season two has a lot more of a jovial Freddy in general. But also, it's like, what? It's a moving experience. Like, part of me thinks Freddy should just have not touched it at all. He'd be like, yeah, moving is awful.
And it cuts back.
Yeah, it just cuts back and they're like, God damn it, this box broke too. We're going to have to file an insurance claim. And then he's like, ah! You know, like, and you're just like, why? And that's it. And then it's like, and that's the end of it. Cause it's like, yeah, he just, wow, must be difficult moving and changing jobs.
I just love Robert having fun when he reads these lines. It's the absolute best.
No, he's like completely going loony.
Yeah.
And he's like full blown part five Freddy at this point.
He really is. And the makeup too, which we've already stated.
Well, that's what I was referring to, yes. But okay.
So,
rude.
My bad. We next cut to Doug and Roxanne as the car pulls up in front of their new home with the moving truck parked out front as well. Doug apologizes that he wants to go meet the new boss and see his new workplace, so he's going to leave Roxanne and begin unpacking. Roxanne reassures him that he's fine, and Doug adds that he wants this to work, referring to their marriage. Roxanne asks him if this is what he told his other wives, and Doug responds, third time's a charm, right? And Roxanne fires back with, it better be, as they kiss before he drives away, leaving her at the new home by herself.
And I gotta say, these two really like to needle each other.
They really do.
Like, I kind of was expecting him to just pull off and never come back at all. Just like, sorry, honey, you live in Springwood now. It's okay, you'll get involved in a knitting circle.
That's exactly what you'll get involved in. So Roxanne enters the home to find it filled from wall to wall with moving boxes. Finding it dark inside the home, she tries to light switch, but it doesn't work. They don't work, says a voice from around the corner as a man dressed as a mover emerges. Turk, who is played by Todd Allen.
Oh, so it said Turk.
Yeah, Turk.
I literally, one of my notes was like, does his name tag say junk? I thought it said junk.
No, it's Turk.
No, it's Turk?
Yeah, Turk.
Turk's an interesting name.
It really is.
Now, I thought I recognized him from something.
Okay, let's see if you did.
Was he in Silent Night, Deadly Night 5?
No, but you are right. You're right there, because I'll tell you one thing. Joe Bob just showed one of the movies he was in.
Oh, he was in Witchboard.
Yes,
he was the main guy in Witchboard.
He is Jim. Yeah.
Why did I think it was Silent Night, Deadly Night 5?
All right, so Todd Allen was in 48 Hours in 1982. He was in Mask, not The Mask, in 1985.
No, he was in the one where she was like, can I touch your face? And he was like, smoking!
Never
right?
Gets old.
Okay, good.
He was also, like I said, Witchboard in 86, and he's in Witchboard 2 as a garbage man.
I do remember that,
yeah.
Because the ending of Witchboard 2 scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. You remember that, with the writing planchette?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
And to show he's even still working today, he was actually in Django Unchained as Dollar Bill a while back as well.
Oh, okay.
So, Turk steps out telling Roxanne that it's about time and he doesn't like to be kept waiting. Fearful, Roxanne lies and says that Doug will be returning any moment, and Turk states he's sure he will, but in the meantime, he needs her to do something really bad for him.
And I just want to mention, she had so many huge boxes.
Yeah.
I really hope one of those boxes is full of nothing but coffee, because that's what, you know what, that's a Freddy Krueger and all that.
So he extends his clipboard to her to sign the receipt. Roxanne signs, and Turk tells her it's been a pleasure as he leaves. Roxanne goes to start unpacking the boxes, finding a dress that she pulls out first that's not hers. She goes to check another box and then comments that these are not her boxes. Opening another, she pulls out a dress that is covered in bloody slashes, which obviously horrifies her. Going to another box, she pulls out a stack of Detective Polk comics and throws them aside.
Hey, Dave.
Hmm.
Don't you have a subscription to Street Detective magazine?
Street Detective? I do not.
That's what the magazine is. Street Detective. For some reason, you know, sometimes like something passes really quick, but you remember it.
Yeah.
I just, for some reason, when it passed by, I was like, Street Detective.
I just love that the cover was just a woman in lingerie holding a knife.
Have you never read Street Detective magazine?
I've read pulp detective novels, yes, but that cover got me. So going to next to the boxes, she finds a black case with latches on it. Pulling out the case and undoing the latches, inside is filled with an assortment of blades, some of which are stained with blood.
Well, only one was stained with blood.
I thought it was two.
It was the little dagger
sword,
which is not, I don't think she should worry. I'm pretty sure that's a seppuku knife. You know, like seppuku, traditional suicide, ritualistic suicide. So I don't think she has to worry about whoever owned these swords.
I was going
to
say, in the case, it is like nothing but samurai swords.
Yeah, they're like ninja samurai swords. Yeah. It's really an interesting choice.
It truly is.
I like it, but it's an odd choice.
I think it was a prop department choice.
That's what they do, Dave.
I know,
you see, swords are props.
I know.
Unlike what you think were props, which is women.
I mean, I'm a tool, so when do I get to be a prop?
Oh, that was solid. You win. Okay.
So she removes one of the daggers and examines it closer, quickly throwing it back down. We next see her talking to Doug on the phone, telling him of her findings and expressing her concern. Doug tries to reassure her it's nothing to worry about and that the owner is probably just a little weird, which isn't a crime. He would know because he's won a lot of cases on that subject. Roxanne tells him that she wants their stuff, and Doug tells her to stop going through more boxes, and he will call the movers to straighten this out and for her to calm down. Roxanne hangs
women,
up.
Women, by the way, professional advice on relationships.
Oh, God.
Women love to be told to calm down.
Well, no, it's calm down, get some rest, and stop thinking about Freddy Krueger.
I thought it was calm down, get some rest. Are you on your period? And then it was stop thinking about Freddy Krueger.
Roxanne hangs up, takes out her pills, popping one of them into her mouth and letting out a sigh. Outside the home, we see a gentleman exit a car and walk over to the door, entering the home. Hearing the door, Roxanne gets up and sees that the man, played by George Kamek, he was in Hunter in 1989, Death Warrant in 1990, Adventures of Pete and Pete, he was Mr. Shrek.
Oh, man, I remember that.
And in Rounders, he was a guard in 98. So he is in the home now. She asks who he is and how did he get in. And first off, let's just talk about this guy. Was Tom Noonan not available?
First of all, he wasn't. I didn't think he looked that much like Tom Noonan, but maybe you're right.
A little bit. Like,
maybe you're right.
The voice, it kind of got me a little bit.
Oh, well, no, he was definitely doing a creepy white guy voice,
oh,
which
yeah.
is Tom Noonan's voice. I love you, Tom. That's not an insult. We love you here.
No, we love you, Tom. So the man tells her that he's been through her things and knows all there is to know about her, adding, I bet your husband loves you in these as he holds up a pair of frilly red panties.
Hey, Dave,
hmm.
Don't you have a pair of frilly red panties just like that?
I'm not commenting. He holds up her pills, mocking her and asking her what it's like to be crazy before accusing her of taking his things. Roxanne tells him the movers are coming to make a switch, prompting him to ask if she's looked through the boxes. Roxanne tells him she didn't and wouldn't because it's not her items. The man, not buying her excuse, tells her he needs to know what she knows, causing Roxanne to make a break and run for it, only to end up in his arms, which was so romantic.
I found that very romantic. More romantic than the B story, which is entirely about romance.
Yes, it is. Oh, I like that B story.
Shut up. You're ruining it.
He tells her he thinks she knows everything as he holds her from behind, raising a knife until the sound of a phone wakes Roxanne up, revealing it all to Henrik B. Another Night. Nightmare.
Wait. A nightmare?
A nightmare.
On Elm Street?
On Elm Street. On Freddy's Nightmares. It's crazy. So, revealing it to be a nightmare, she fell asleep on the floor against a box. Roxanne answers the phone to hear Doug inform her. He called the movers, but Roxanne interrupts him, telling her he was there and he went through their things. Doug asks who did this, and Roxanne tells him that she doesn't know and guesses she fell asleep. Doug takes a second looking frustrated, and then asks if she has any pills left. Roxanne tells him that she has plenty and she's fine before asking about the movers. Doug then informs her that they apologize, but the movers will send someone over first thing in the morning as they've already gone home for the day.
Ah, lazy movers. Pride union.
Doug offers to take her to the dinner, but Roxanne tells him that she really just wants him to be home.
Oh, man, they could have went to that French restaurant from that one
fancy
episode.
French restaurant
I love
that. What is it? Saturday Night Special.
Yeah.
So Doug tells her he'll be there as soon as he can and hangs up. Roxanne is next seen walking outside the house with grocery bags as she enters the home. Putting the bags down, she removes two candles, but is startled as Turt comments on the candles being very romantic. Stepping out from behind the boxes, Roxanne asks him what he's doing there, and Turk shows her the house keys, saying that he forgot to give them to her, adding he thought that they could talk. Stating that she's new in town and he's a native, so he could show her around. Roxanne reminds him that she's married, and Turk replies that he won't hold that against her.
But will she hold her beautiful body against him?
So she tells him he's not here to move boxes. He can leave. Turk asks about moving her, and Roxanne orders him out and closes the door behind him.
Which is all you need to do when someone is making you feel sexually uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just close the door. It's fine. He didn't have any time to copy her keys or anything. God. It's fine. It's fine.
We see her sitting, setting up a table with plates, candles, and wine as she pours herself a glass and sits on the floor. She hears a door shut and unlock, thinking that Doug has come home. She runs to the door to get out and pulls the knob only for it to come off right in her hand. The man's laughter echoes as he appears behind her. She sinks to the floor in terror as his laughter carries on. We next see that the man now has Roxanne tied down to a table and is sharpening knives as he looks over her, which mind you, it is a kitchen, it's the kitchen table, but it has like a picnic, I can't think of it, cloth on it. So.
A tablecloth?
Yes, tablecloth.
Yeah, no, yeah, it has like the aesthetics of like a nice picnic. Yes. Also, what kind of lazy killer doesn't have his blade sharp before he gets there? Pathetic.
So we next see the man has Roxanne tied down to the table. He's sharpening his knives as he looks over her. He tells her that since she's so curious about him, he's going to give her a demonstration on what he does.
Ooh.
She tells him it's just a dream and that all she has to do is wake up and he'll be gone.
Oh, thank goodness. I was afraid he sold timeshares.
The man asks her what if she's wrong. She asks who he is and the man tells her that she knows. She's been thinking about him all day long, wondering, did he cut them? Did he hurt them? He raises the knife, adding that she may scream if she likes, because he likes it when they scream. He brings the knife down as she screams, waking her up to reveal another nightmare, as she knocks over the glass of wine, shattering it and cutting her finger. Roxanne looks around the boxes, finding them now empty, including the knife case, which is completely empty of its blades. We now see Roxanne in a phone booth on the phone with the movers, pleading for them to bring her stuff. They tell her they aren't able until tomorrow, so Roxanne takes down the address of where the items were and wants to go collect them.
Which I feel like is not a violation of privacy at all. Well, then give me the address of your other customer. Yeah. And it's like, okay, ma'am, you seem reasonable. Here you go.
As she hangs up, Doug pulls up, telling her he was at a meeting with the DA before Roxanne tells him that the man broke into their house and took back his toys. Doug asks who and what is she talking about. She explains the man who killed women and cut their dresses and likes to kill. Doug states that he believes her before removing the pills from her pockets, scolding her about going off of her prescription and how it causes her to have panic attacks.
I think it's honestly very refreshing to take a break from parents not believing their kids.
Yeah.
To go back to spouses not believing their kids. I feel like that. It's a valuable lesson we could really take in Springwood.
So Doug begs her to take one of the pills. Roxanne tells him that if they go to the man's house, it will prove that she's right. Doug agrees as long as she takes a pill first. We next see them outside the other man's home.
You forgot that she pretended to take the pill.
Oh, yeah, she did pretend to
take
it.
Yeah, she was about, she like took it. It was like, okay.
Yeah. Bloop.
Yeah, that's a good, it's a good sign when you pretend to take your medication.
Yeah.
That is, hey, guys out there, that's what we call a green flag. If you meet a girl and you're really into her and she moves in with you and then you open up your pillowcase and find a bunch of pills, marriage, it's
or,
time.
Or she's Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween Resurrection.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, either way, put a ring on it.
So, making her way further, or excuse me, by the front door, they come to the front door and find it locked. Doug tells her that he's going to try the back and makes his way around the house. Roxanne finds a window unlocked and enters the home. Inside the house, she finds various moving boxes and trash along the floor. Making her way further inside, she stops as the man's voice echoes, telling her she won't like what she'll find here and she should go back. We then see that the man is now holding a knife with Doug tied down to the table, not unlike her previous nightmare. He sharpens the knives again, repeating, "There's no place like home. There's no place like home."
But he didn't go home from doing that.
No,
that witch was lying.
He was also not wearing the ruby slippers.
You don't know that for a fact. We barely even got to see his shoes.
He repeats there's no place like home, but Roxanne gets, or excuse me, he repeats that there's no place like home. I lost my place here.
It's okay. You don't know how to read or write.
There it is. As he goes to cut Doug's throat, but we cut back to Roxanne and Doug, who are actually just parked outside the home, revealing that this was a daymare.
A daymare?
A daymare.
Okay.
Doug tries to talk sense into her, stating that they should go home, but Roxanne gets out and approaches the house. Inside, she sees the moving boxes stacked and begins to walk to the front door. Doug tries to reason with her to let it go, but she persists. She enters the house as she pleads not to and finds more boxes from the Springwood Moving Storage. Around the corner...
Springwood Moving Storage? You mean moving and storage?
Moving and storage, excuse me.
The Springwood Moving Storage. What we do is... Hey, guys, hey, thanks for checking me out here at Springwood Moving Storage. What we do is we take your belongings and we put them in trucks 24 hours a day. They're traveling around Ohio in order to make sure that your storage is always moving.
I mean, it's important.
It is our promise to you, even though at this time diesel is upsettingly 80 cents a gallon in 1989, we're willing to take on that expense if it means you are proud to be a customer of Springwood Moving Storage. Located at, you didn't get us. We don't have an address. We're always moving.
Well done. Well done. So around the corner, she finds Turk, who informs her that the company told him to come back and get her stuff and move it, so he's waiting on his crew in the truck. Roxanne goes to find Doug, relieved at finding Turk, but Doug tells Turk that it's not necessary he do this right now and relieves him, causing Turk to storm out.
So Dave, I want to posit something to you.
Yes.
What if she's actually crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if she's actually imagining all this because she's nuts? And then, like, when she dies at the end or whatever happens at the end, it just cuts to Freddy and he's just like, I was going to start after lunch.
What'd I miss?
Yeah, he's just got a pastrami
Shit,
sandwich.
Am I late?
good, you're dead. he'd just be like, I didn't get to start the nightmare yet. This has never happened to me before.
Somebody get my agent on the phone.
I'm feeling very emasculated.
So he tells him it's not necessary right now and relieves Turk. Turk storms out and Roxanne chases after him, but Turk informs her he can't do anything if the owner is throwing him out of the house.
That's true, and you can't enter unless you're invited.
That is true.
Or is that vampires?
That might be vampires.
No, no, no. I'm sorry. That's John Carpenter's vampires.
John Carpenter's
That's
vampires.
That's the one where, okay, yeah.
There we go. Roxanne questions that Doug is the owner of the home. Turk asks, that guy is your husband? Then walks out stating, you guys are nuts. Roxanne returns to the home as Doug seals the door, locking it, and berating Roxanne for looking into the boxes and not being patient, waiting till tomorrow.
Yeah, really.
Roxanne tells him she doesn't understand as Doug picks up one of the samurai swords, telling her that there's a side to him she doesn't know. And all his other wives found out. Too bad about them.
Aww.
He continues that this marriage could have worked and what she didn't know wouldn't have hurt her. He adds that all those sickos and murderers he defended were amateurs and that Roxanne was right about one thing. He does love to kill. He likes it a lot. Raising the sword, he charges her, but Roxanne surprises him, stabbing him with the blade and dropping him to the floor dead. The A story ends as we cut to Freddy, who states, so, are you happily married? Look at your spouse. Go ahead, look. You looked, didn't you? Let me ask you something. How well do you really know them? Thinking of moving? Give Springwood a shot. Come for a night, stay forever.
And I like that in these Freddy interstitials now, he's in season two, he's definitely become, I mean, he always breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah.
But he's become like way more breaking the fourth wall. He's like, you want to see something horrible. You know, like he's a lot more, he's honestly a lot more Crypt Keeper-esque.
Very.
Because I remember when I first heard about Freddy's nightmares, I thought it was like, you know, people were always saying like, it's like Tales from the Crypt, but he's the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah.
And then when I watched it, I was like, he's a little bit more directly involved than a Crypt Keeper. He doesn't, like, I thought it would be like Freddy would be like, in Springwood, this can happen sometimes, yeah. You know, and then it would kind of like fade over to it. But instead, it's, you know, it's him like popping up in a pile of women's underwear,
yep.
And saying like, you know, let's see how far they'd go to be good at track or something, you know. So I will say, but in this one, it's still, he's not like full blown Rod Serling or full blown Crypt Keeper, but he's definitely a little bit more playful toward the audience.
Yeah.
And which I find charming.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously.
No, it's no, super fun.
No, our biggest problem is this too much Freddy. Yeah, ain't going to happen. That's not going to be our problem. So, yeah.
So that is the end of the A story. Henrik, would you like to explain the A and B story of Freddy's nightmares?
No.
Too bad. Go.
Okay, so well, on Freddy's Nightmares, they have an A story and a B story. And for those out there who are familiar with the terminology A and B story, This is a little different. Usually A stories, B stories, C stories, they're all intertwined together so they kind of reveal and happen and blah, blah, blah. But on Freddy's Nightmares, the A story and the B story are split right down the middle so that in some areas the show was 44 minutes, an hour with commercials, but in other areas it could be a half an hour with commercials because Bob Shea does not leave money on the table and neither does Lorimar. So that is what is up. So the B story is usually very loosely related.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is not related much at all. Yep. It's always somewhat related, though.
Somewhat, yeah.
Sometimes you have a ton of other characters. Sometimes it's one. In this case, why don't you take over and tell us who does the connective tissue on this bad boy?
So the B story begins inside an apartment building as we meet Emily Jameson. She is played by Dee Young. She has 121 acting credits on her
And you're
her
going to read
resume.
All of them now.
Rock and Roll High School in 1979 was the first one.
Wow, okay.
Strange Behavior, a.k.a. Dead Kids in 1981.
I like that movie.
Spaceballs in 87. She's the waitress at the diner.
No. Yeah. Oh, that's so fun. Okay.
And, I mean, it keeps going. Serpent in the Rainbow, Dark Justice, Red Eye, and she was most recently in Ant-Man, The Quantum Realm.
I wonder...
Quantumania.
I wonder... You said it wrong. It's fine. I do wonder if... So she was in Rock and Roll High School.
Yeah.
Corman movie.
Yep.
And then she was on Freddy's Nightmares. Of course, she was in season two, which Freilich was a consultant on, but he wasn't the full-blown showrunner on. Jeff Freilich, if you haven't listened, he did an amazing two-part interview on the show all about how he made Freddy's Nightmares with all of the awesome people there. I wonder, since then she pops up on Dark Justice, that makes me think that he may have gotten to know her from working for Roger Corman.
I could totally see
which
that.
Would be cool, and I'm speculating.
I would say so, but hey, we can hope. We can hope.
If I can dream, I can walk.
So we meet Emily Jameson, who's unpacking at her new place. We see Turk enter with a stack of boxes on his cart. Emily asks him about the boxes being hers, and Turk confirms that they all are and that everyone always states they didn't realize how much stuff they had when they move.
Is that true, Dave? Because last week I was really giving you the what for about the fact that you've never helped me move, but I've helped you move twice. Twice?
One thing about me moving is I always have a lot of the heavy stuff last. Like I know,
because I would show up and be like, okay, I'm ready to move. And I was told ahead, you were like, don't worry, I'm saving the heavy stuff. I take care of that. And then I walked in and you were like, so when I was six, like my uncle was really always yelling at me and stuff. And I was like, oh man, the heavy stuff is waiting for us.
Heavy stuff indeed.
Oh man.
But no, I have a large media collection.
Do you?
Yes. And I usually move that ahead of time. That's actually usually the first thing I move.
Oh, so what you're saying is you move the lightest entirely plastic things.
That is not the lightest. Like between my vinyl and my Blu-rays, those are freaking heavy boxes usually.
Blu-rays are not that heavy. They're not.
They're not bad. But
at least you, thank God you don't collect VHS.
Oh, I remember you telling me about that.
I had to help a friend move who had 1,000 VHSs. I helped them move twice. And of course the VHSs either go upstairs or in the basement. Yep. So it's like, oh cool, so these really heavy boxes head to the only stairs in the building, kid.
Actually, yeah, Blu-rays aren't that heavy. It's probably the CD boxes and the vinyl boxes.
CD and vinyl is very heavy. That's why you should throw both of them away.
Rude. So Turk tells her that everyone states they never realized how much they had. She instructs him to take the stack into the bedroom. As Turk wheels the cart, an elderly woman enters named Rose. She's played by Camilla Ashland. She was in Dark Shadows in 1970, Blake Edwards 10 in 1979. She was also on V in 1983.
Ooh, Robert Englund connection.
Yep. And she is Emily's neighbor, and she comments on Emily being an archaeologist as she takes artifacts out of the moving box. The two share words about their love of Egypt and its history, as Emily states that she's into history about the American Indians. Rose asks her if she's digging somewhere in Springwood, but Emily informs her that she's just an assistant at the university, but she'd rather be out there getting her hands dirty.
I'd rather be fishing.
Rose asks if she's single, offering to introduce her to all the single young men, but Emily states she's done field testing and what she's looking for isn't out there. Rose tells her that she's right next door as she leaves her unpacking.
I don't understand, though. Why didn't the old lady tell her where the cat shelter is then?
Oh, man.
Oh, you're never going to meet a nice young man. Well, in that case, you need 27 cats. I know where the Springwood Animal Shelter is. There are a lot of cats there from kids who died in their sleep, oddly enough. I don't get it either, but it's probably that rock and roll music.
Clearly. So
I screwed you up so good.
She leaves her to her unpacking. Turk brings in a box marked kitchen, asking if that's where she would like the box to go. Emily fires back that no, she would like that box put in the bathroom, being sarcastic because that's where she'll find the pot and pans later.
And I'm so glad that the connective tissue is the delivery guy, Turk, because Springwood's blue-collar community has been horribly underrepresented in this show. It's about damn time.
That it is. That it is indeed. So Turk tells her that he could just dump the box right here, which he does as he sets the box down and hands her the receipt to sign. He then tells her that Rose wasn't wrong, offering her his knowledge of being a native and being new and her being new in town, he could show her around.
She
turns him down, telling him that he's not her type, and Turk asks, what is her type? Emily tells him she's working on it and to close the door behind him.
And I want to mention, when she was going through her boxes, did you notice there was a skull in there? The little old lady found the skull, and all I could think was, man, bringing a skull to Springwood, that's like bringing your own water to the swimming pool. Like, that, you're gonna need that. Yeah. You know, you'll never find that anywhere. Why don't you just bring 1,000 maniacs while you're at it?
Oh, God. We then cut to Freddy's domain as a record player cycles a happy tune, and we hear Freddy say, "And hey, babe, I really respect you. I mean it. I've been looking high and low, and you are just my type."
Ugh, and the worst part about this, though, Freddie was listening to vinyl.
He was listening to vinyl.
And that, it's a bummer, because I was just starting to like the guy. I was like, you know, he's not that bad. I mean, yeah, he's done a few, he's a vinyl hipster. Damn it. Damn it, Freddie.
My dream girl. I mean, you get me so hot. But you know what I love most? It's that love line in your socket. The camera pans out, revealing a skeleton with no eyes, as Freddie holds up two eyes on a skewer, stating, "I only have eyes for you." And he then tongues the eyes, of course.
Well, I mean, Freddy tongues all things. And all things are to be tongued by Freddy on God's planet.
This is true.
God's planet?
God's planet.
I don't know. Leave me alone.
We then cut back to Emily, who's settling down into the bed, picking up her reading glasses and laying down with a notebook. We fade to a gentleman named Gregory, played by Webster Williams. He was in The Terminator in 1984, Cheers in 1989.
Different Strokes. You said he's Webster.
Harry in the Hendersons TV series in 92. Ooh. He's seated at a desk in what appears to be sometime in the 19th century. He hears footsteps outside, or he hears footsteps and watches someone approach his front door and push a letter underneath it. He walks over and grabs the letter, opening it to reveal a message that states, "My darling Gregory, I know this is dangerous, but I could not help myself. I simply had to tell you how much I love you. My heart is bursting. Please tell me this is not impossible. I don't care if you're married. We must be together somehow.
Jerry.
If I cannot be with you, I fear I will die. Your loving Jane." Gregory carefully folds the letter up and walks over to a bookshelf, climbing the ladder and pushing aside a fake wall to reveal a cubby where he stashes the letter along with others already inside it. We then see Emily wake up with the notebook on her chest and remove her glasses. She goes out to her living room and to the bookshelf that looks very much like the one from the dream. She climbs the ladder and goes to the section where the cubby was, pulling aside various items, revealing the secret cubby is in fact there with the letters inside. She removes the letters and climbs down, looking over the stack. She sits down and begins to read through them, finding the exact letter from Jane to Gregory from her dream.
Now, all I started thinking as she's pulling these letters out of the wall is this going to be like the lake house?
I mean,
the Keanu Reeves romantic movie about
with the phantom mailbox.
The phantom mailbox sends letters back in time, basically. Because if it is, number one, I'm here for it. And number two, Gil and Al need to sue.
This is true. This is very true. She looks around cautiously, asking, "Gregory, are you still here?" The next morning, we see Emily wake up with the letters on her nightstand. She picks them up and returns to the living room. We see her sipping coffee and reading through them. She walks past a window as we suddenly see a Victorian woman in the apartment. She stops, realizing what she saw, and walks back to see that the woman is now gone. Later, Rose comes over and Emily shows her the letters, telling her how she found them. Emily flaunts over how romantic they are, explaining that Jane was Gregory's mistress who loved her despite his wife. She asks Rose if she knew of anyone with those names, but Rose tells her that she knew no one and tells her that the building was supposedly built in 1890, adding this was Springwood's first high-rise, stating that her and Emily's apartments used to be one. Emily gushes over the secrets that must be within these walls. Later that day at work, Emily sits at work, yawning and catching the attention of another worker before she quiets down and picks up another letter. In the letter, Jane relates to Gregory, concerned that Margaret, his wife, has become suspicious of them. We next see Jane sitting on a bench as Gregory comes over to her, expressing his love as the two walk off. We then see Margaret emerge from the side and begin to follow the two. We cut back to Emily at work reading the letter, which she puts away and begins to work again. That same day, back in her apartment, Emily explains to Rose about how the letters are getting more and more intense with Margaret's suspicions and that she's even spying on us, causing Rose to ask, us? Realizing what she said, Emily tries to change the subject, stating she wants to reorganize the apartment to the same style that Gregory had it, adding that he and Jane made love in every room of the house.
So, all I'm saying is I can't wait for the next dream in the past so we can, God willing, see Freddy Krueger riding around on a bicycle with one big front wheel.
Oh, my God,
he's
I wish.
Right, he's just like, pip, pip. That's our Freddy.
So Rose gives Emily guff for her holding out on the juicy details and asks her, where was Margaret during all this? Emily states that she was at tea parties or sometimes in their cottage in the woods, but regardless, their encounters were all planned very carefully by Gregory. Emily takes a walk outside and walks past a bench, realizing it is the same one from the letters. She sits down but is startled by Turk, who asks her out again. Only to be rejected by Emily again.
How many of the kids that Freddy Krueger has killed in Springwood do you think are Turk's illegitimate children? I'm starting to think it's in the 30% range, and that's honestly a conservative estimate.
I could very much believe that.
I'm starting to really feel that way.
He adds that she's not that busy, and doesn't she want to be with a real man? But Emily tells him she has a date and walks off. We next see her back in bed at the night, reading another letter from Jane. She removes her glasses and sees Gregory in her doorway, telling her that he loves her. He makes his way to the bed, which is now back in the 19th century, as the two embrace each other. Emily, now dressed as Jane, rises from the bed, staring at Gregory, and makes her way to the living room and finds a picture of Gregory and Margaret. She makes her way onto the balcony, enjoying the evening as Margaret suddenly appears, yelling, "He's mine!" shoving Emily off the balcony to the ground.
And I gotta say, I mean, women, you know, like, this chick is so amped to be the side chick in this I was trying to think Edwardian era or whatever.
Yeah.
And all I could think was, you know what? Okay, you do you, Slay Queen. Figuratively and probably literally.
And literally. The next morning, a distraught Emily sits on the couch as Rose enters, asking about the latest, but Emily tells her that she doesn't want to talk about the letters anymore. Rose asks her if it's due to the intensity, but Emily asks her, is it better to be the wife or the other woman in this scenario? Rose tells her the other woman, she only sees the best part of him.
Rose is legit. She knows what's up, and she... No, like... Rose is like Chad pilled.
Yeah.
She is like 100%. She's like, oh no, honey, that the thing to be would be the chick getting railed.
Emily reaffirms she's done with the letters, causing Rose to ask what happened. Emily explains that Jane was the perfect mistress who would do anything for him and their love. Margaret was the woman who loved him and supported him, the perfect wife. She is next shown burning the letters in the fireplace and feeling relieved. We next see Turk badgering Emily again as she returns to her apartment carrying a bag of groceries, asking why she won't let him take her out. Asking her why does she think the perfect guy is out there. Emily tells him that she's found it before shutting the door in his face as Turk tells her to prepare to spend the rest of her life alone with an attitude like that.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No.
The rest of her life will be spent alone.
Later that night, Emily climbs the ladder to nail the secret cubby shut. As she reaches to the top, she slips back into another fantasy. She walks into Gregory's apartment, finding who she believes to be Margaret, pointing a pistol at her and explaining that she will not let her come between them.
Yeah, it's a little Derringer pistol two barrels on top of each other. And I just want to mention real quick before we get to the thrilling climax,
yes.
that I love when she was reading one of the romances earlier. It just dawned on me. There's a line where he says, feel your mouth on mine.
And
that is the most romantic phrasing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Because she says it to him at the doorway when she sees him.
I want to feel your mouth on mine.
So Emily argues that she's not Margaret. She's Jane. But Gregory tells her she's nothing like Jane. Jane pipes up that she doesn't know her and has never seen her before. Emily catches sight of her hair in the mirror, finding it red and realizing that she is Margaret now. Gregory raises the pistol, stating he wishes things were different, but she's left him no choice. Emily tries to argue that she was Jane, but Gregory fires the gun. We then cut back to reality as Emily falls off the ladder to her death in the apartment, hitting the floor.
Yeah, she must have been pretty weak. I mean, she fell like 5 feet.
5 feet, if that.
But I will say, I liked the way they used that that old Twilight Zone trope
yeah.
of you don't know who you are in the historical yes. moment, but instead of it being like Hitler or whatever, I think it was a really interesting use of the whole like looking in the mirror and realizing like, wait,
the hair, yeah.
I'm not the person in history I wanted to be.
Yep.
That's good stuff. No, and I really like, good. And I'm appreciative that Freddie took a moment to say like, this time I'm going to turn a woman on then kill her, you know, instead of, because he loves to give dudes boners before they die.
He does indeed. So the episode ends as we cut back to Freddie, who states, next time you're alone in your house, think about who went before you. It might be pretty crowded. The dead have to go somewhere. Ah, now this is what I call love letters, revealing Jane's letter now stained with a big RIP in blood on it. And that, my friends, is season 2, episode 3, Welcome to Springwood.
Now, I want to point out, though, real quick.
Yes.
That I'm not trying to act like I'm so clever or whatever, but it sure looked like a script page. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were being green and not wasting a bunch of paper.
Yeah.
But no, that was a hell of a love story.
It was.
A Springwood love story, don't you think?
I liked it a lot.
And, oh, God.
Oh, here he comes.
Here comes Freddie. It's fine. It's fine. Don't even worry about it. Hey, Freddie.
Hey, bitches. Hey. How you doing?
Doing good, Freddie. What's going on?
Oh, you know, not too much. I was just feeling kind of, I don't know. I was feeling some feelings I haven't felt in a while after revisiting this episode.
What feelings would those be, if dare I ask?
Well, first of all, you know, I mean, I don't usually open up like this.
Uh-huh.
But, well, mainly I wanted to make fun of that chick who was like, oh, I love a guy from the past. It's like, do you have any idea how racist that guy was?
That's actually a good point,
That's
Freddie.
That's a good point, Freddie.
Oh, yeah, he did not like blacks or Mexicans, I guarantee it. And he hate Puerto Ricans, too, if he knew what they were.
Wow. Well,
okay, okay.
Wow.
I mean, but, you know, at least Freddie, you're kind of on the right side of this argument, at least.
Yeah, but in the end, she thought she was falling for him. But reality, she was just falling.
he is right. He's correct.
I don't like this Freddy being right thing.
Anyway, I got to admit, I'm feeling the love, you know that? Like, look, I've got a heart on right now. Touch it.
I'm not looking.
Touch
I'm
it.
Not looking and
touch it with your hands.
No.
Put your mouth on my mouth.
I will not. I will not.
You know the old saying, it's better to have loved and lost than to have died in your dreams and then died for real. All right, anyway, I'm going to go actually see a woman unlike you two.
That's weird. Bye, Freddy.
Yeah, take care, Freddy. It's always nice when Freddy pops by.
You know, yeah.
Even if Warner Brothers won't let us show him on screen. But
this is true.
Yeah, no, but... So, David, what was your rating?
All right.
I mean, I guess we got to jump to brass tacks, right?
Breaking down the episode, I think, honestly, Freddy's interactions were top-notch in this. I thought they were hilarious. I love his breaking of the fourth wall and just how jovial he is.
I love the idea, like, look at your spouse. Really look at him. Oh, if you did it. You know, I love that. That's good stuff. I'd like to think Freddy ended some marriages.
I would think so. I think the A story is a lot of fun, but I really enjoyed what they did with the B story. So, with all that in mind, I'm gonna give this a B+.
Was this the second time that you liked the B story more than the A story?
I think so, yeah.
And you're gonna give it a B+.
I'm gonna
last
give this
week
a B+.
You gave so you liked this B story more than last week's B story.
I did, yeah. I think what I liked about this one was that I don't think we've had a period piece yet on Freddy's Nightmares.
I mean, it depends on how you look at it, because like they've had some moments where people are like flashing back to like organized crime
yeah.
stuff, but it's never like, you know,
Jane Austen, or
like flappers and doing the Charleston and stuff.
Yeah.
So I could see that. Okay. So that was one of the reasons yeah. you like that Springwood
went
old school.
I appreciated that they went with that. And also I like Gil and Al's writing a lot.
Oh, you sucking up to him. Cause they're going to be on the show soon. I
Possibly.
Like that. That's fair. Well, I am going, you know, I hate to do it, but I'm going to go with a B+ too.
I liked
the B story a ton. I thought the B story had a lot to chew on and
yeah.
enjoy, which is something that I think matters, you know, like that the B story had like a love element to
yeah.
it and the idea that like an archaeologist comes to Springwood and everything. I don't know. I really dug that.
If I had one issue with the A story, it was like the first. So, of course, I watched these twice. The first time I watched it, I thought it was a little
anticlimactic, because especially like when she stabs him, it's just like, oh, and then we cut to Freddy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, he basically, Freddy just did what he does best, which is abuse people with mental problems.
But yeah, no, I did enjoy the creepiness of the A story, but I really just like the originality of the B story.
Okay, no, I like the idea of the letters being in the wall. Also, I mean, we don't know where Springwood is, but a house built in 1890 would have to be Northern Ohio. So, since we're in the dirty South Ohio. Yes. So, I'll give it a B plus as well.
All right.
Double D. And what do we have coming up next week?
So next week, I have already previewed this, and I've talked to Henrik about this as well. Next week is season 2, episode 4, Photo Finish, which is directed by Tom DeSimone and written by Bill Frohlich. But... Bill Frohlich is his name.
No, no, I know, because there's Frohlich and then Frohlich. No, it always threw me a little bit. Okay, keep going.
It is a Halloween-themed episode.
So there's Michael Myers in it?
Freddy-centric.
Oh, okay, I'm listening.
And the only thing I'm going to say is that Freddy is really, really having a good time in the A story, and he's also in the B story a lot.
Oh, okay, so next week we're going to have... season 2, episode 4, and it was called Photo Finish. Okay, well, and do you have anything else you want to say to the nice folks out there?
I think the only thing that I can say is that if you want to keep in contact with us on the social medias, we've got, of course, the Welcome to Primetime page. We are trying to get some more followers on that. We also have an Instagram that is David's Watching Movies Again at Instagram. So if you go there, that's where the official posting is for all of our episodes and all of our bonus stuff that we'll put there. So if you want to follow us, that is where you can find us.
And I want to mention a huge thank you to those of you who have already went out of your way to review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You don't have to write a review if you don't want. You can just do the stars. It helps immensely having more star ratings on there. So if you search Welcome to Primetime Freddy's Nightmares on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, give us a rating. We'd really appreciate it. It doesn't cost you a penny. Of course, if you want to help us in a more direct way, you can go to the Patreon at freddysnightmares.com. Email us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. So I guess we're going to get out of here, though.
Yes.
And remember, if you email us, you can also ask questions for Jeff Frohlich. We'll eventually have him back on the air to talk about your questions and so much more. But until next week, we just hope you're ready for another trip to Springwood. And if you're unable to see these episodes, we hope we can at least provide you the desperately needed context.
Give you the details.
Of one of the greatest programs that you probably never watched and didn't realize was going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So until next time, my friends, take care, be well, and don't be Dave.
We'll see you.